Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
You know, I think there are two really interesting stories that come out of Saturday for Georgia against Vanderbilt. One of those is how Georgia played. The other is how Georgia fans felt about the way that Georgia played. And maybe this is a legit criticism that kind of, you know, goes along with what Georgia's trying to do this year. Maybe this is a fan base that's just sort of getting bored by beating SEC East teams by two or three touchdowns every time they go out there. Difficult to tell one or the other, but one way or another, a lot of Georgia fans were not thrilled with a 30-6 win for Georgia against Vanderbilt on Saturday. We saw this in the forum at forum.dognation.com. We saw this on our Dog Nation postgame show, which you can go back and rewatch on Dog Nation's Facebook page, Dog Nation's YouTube page, the Twitter, pretty much all the Dog Nation video channels. It may disappear on Twitter, but you get the point. All the Dog Nation video channels, you can kind of see where the reaction is from what happened against Vanderbilt, and you probably noticed some of this yourself when it comes to social media here, too. So let me try to do two things off the top of our program to begin our week. I'm going to deal with the reality of the fact that the Georgia offense came off came out very hot against Vanderbilt on Saturday, built up a big lead early, and did kind of sputter some after that. However, for the Georgia fan who's a little too frustrated by that or asking too many tough questions about why it wasn't different, why it was not total annihilation instead of just complete domination, I'm also going to tell you to take your cue from Kirby Smart here a little bit, who doesn't seem to be all that concerned so much about what went down here. Let me give you an example of this. Kirby Smart's kind of opening thought, opening comment, not taking for granted the fact that Georgia went out there, built the lead that it did, and then coasted after that. To hear Kirby talk about this, the never satisfied Smart was actually kind of okay with the way things went down on Saturday. Here is Kirby in his own words.
We've still got a long way to go. We didn't have a lot. We had a lot of undisciplined penalties and didn't play efficiently in the second half, at least offensively. But I'm proud of our guys. I don't take it lightly when you go on the road in a SEC opener and you open up with, you know, a couple touchdowns, two or three touchdowns in a row. I think that's big. And we had a lot of young guys on defense step up and play well.
So Kirby says, I don't take it lightly when we go out here in this stadium and do that. And I think if Kirby's not taking that lightly, if he's not taking that for granted, I think the best advice for Georgia fans would be to not take that for granted either. Be thankful that your team went out and got an easy win. Be thankful that your team displayed what it displayed against a spot, Nashville, Vanderbilt Stadium, that has not always been easy for SEC teams. And frankly, it hasn't always been quite as easy as it was supposed to be for Georgia teams either. So for the most part, Kirby Smart doesn't seem to be all that bothered by the fact that the most of the second quarter, certainly all the second half, wasn't quite as efficient as the first quarter looked like when Demetrius Roberts was catching touchdowns and Georgia was spreading the ball around to seemingly everyone on the roster. Wasn't quite the same after that. Now, a lot of Georgia players had their chance to kind of weigh in and give their thoughts on what changed. Why was it the offense started looking a little less crisp, a little less efficient? Let me start with Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm here.
Yeah, it just wasn't as clean. You know, that's kind of part of it when you play the first game. You know, you're not as clean as you want to be, but that's kind of the way it was there in the second half. You know, had some penalties, had a turnover here, turnover there. But it is what it is. You know, first game, we're thankful to come out of the win against a great opponent.
So, P says some penalties come up here, and there were a few of those on Georgia. A couple turnovers, the Kyrus Jackson situation on what would have been a deep throw and a connection that Fromm was able to make to him. That's an example of that. Remember, you have the holding penalty that takes away the deep throw to Robertson in, what, the second quarter, am I remembering that correctly? That's another big play you could have added to Georgia's ledger if not for that. So Fromm kind of cites some penalties here. Kind of cites the turnover that ultimately happened on the Jackson play. DeAndre Swift, though, had something else to say. He kind of wondered, hey, did you know the offense just kind of lose some of its luster, some of its enthusiasm, however you want to say it. DeAndre Swift was kind of talking about some of that when it comes to what went down in the second half here. Here is Swift on the somewhat stalled Georgia offense.
What would you say the difference was in the lack of efficiency in the second half that we saw in the first? What was the difference?
I can't really put our finger on it. I don't know if it's being too conservative. I'm not sure. We just need to get back to work and make sure that don't happen again.
So maybe a little conservative. Certainly some Georgia fans would probably agree with that, although I guess the Georgia coaches themselves would agree with Swift's last sentiment that the big issue is that whatever was right or wrong on Saturday, the real key is to get back to work this week during practice and be ready for the other games that are going to come later on the season. Let me go to Demetrius Robertson here for a moment. He was a part of the energy of the first quarter, but what happened after that? D-Rob also offered his thoughts on that too.
I feel like we'll do a whole lot better. Just learning how to finish. When we get down there in the money zone, you know, we gotta cash in and do our job, do the little things right. You know, the penalties, the not focusing on our assignment and things like that. But we'll get better. Go back to the drawing board.
I mean, ultimately, I think that D-Rob is really zeroing in on the issue to the extent that there is one for Georgia, that there were some scoring opportunities on this show. We think of scoring opportunities not so much being the red zone. Robertson there calls it the money zone, which is kind of a cool phrase. For us around here, it's not so much 20-yard line and in as it is 40-yard line and in. Those are really the moments when you've got to turn would-be field goals into touchdowns and would-be stall drives into at least some points. You've got to be able to do that. And that's probably the one thing that Georgia on Saturday did not do enough of. Interesting to hear Robertson say that. And for what it's worth, Georgia running back Brian Harrigan, who much like Robertson found the end zone on Saturday, was also citing some of those red zone woes. Here is Brian Arian.
I mean, I saw it the same way. The offense just couldn't score when we got to the red area. I mean, we should do better than that. Our goal is to score 100% of the time, which we didn't complete tonight. So, I mean, we got to go to practice and get better.
So he says you got to go out there and do that. I had a chance to kind of follow up with Arian on that and say, okay, so for the Georgia offense, which, you know, dominates in the running game and certainly has scored plenty of points over the last couple of years, what changes in terms of what you're seeing from the defense when you get down there close, when the field is smaller and theoretically maybe Georgia's a little easier to defend because you can bring more bodies up to the line of scrimmage? What is it that changes there in that moment in those kinds of situations? And Arian weighed in on that too.
Well, when we get inside the 20, a lot of the defenses start to send blitzes and cats and corners and stuff like that and games on the line. So it's kind of harder to run the ball right there. And it's also kind of hard to throw the ball because they blitzing so much. But if you can get a good playoff, then it's a score.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously I think that makes a lot of sense. As we said before, when fields get smaller, it just gets a little easier to defend against UGA because of what it does. However, you can hear Arian say what he says. You can hear D-Rob say what he says. You can hear Fromm and all these guys talk about the issues of an offense that didn't look quite as crisp late in the game as it did at the very beginning of the game. Can't help but remind you here, though, that Kirby Smart doesn't necessarily feel that way. And I want to give you an example of this. You know, off the top of the program, we heard from Smart saying, listen, I'm not going to take this for granted. I'm not going to take it lightly that Georgia came in here, built a big lead, essentially ended any threat of an upset within the first couple of minutes in this game. Smart says, I'm not going to take that lightly. There was also another moment in the post-game press conference that kind of offered a similar feeling from Smart. I asked him about something that happened during the game. The fact that the Georgia offensive line on those short yardage situations were at least two examples of that, where Georgia tried to really power its way to a first down in a short yardage situation, wasn't able to get it done. The offensive line that some think could be the best in college football, in that moment at least, those couple moments, was kind of stymied. Was that a reason for concern from Kirby Smart? If he wants to be dissatisfied with a 30-6 win versus Vanderbilt, this was his chance to do it. And as you heard, if you watched this in the Dog Nation video channels on Saturday evening, Smart didn't want to go there. Smart seemingly was kind of okay with most of what happened on Saturday. Here is another example of that.
325 yards rushing. I'm not going to get overly concerned about the two that we didn't get or the one we didn't get. Certainly can a lot of room for improvement, but those guys play physical, and those guys see every front and every box known to man. I'm disappointed we didn't convert those, but that's good, guys. We've got to have a lot of things to work on. That's just one of the many things that we continue to improve on. And everything will be exaggerated great, or everything will be exaggerated horrible, and that's just the way
it is.
We're glad to see.
So when you hear, we cut that out of that. I cut that clip a little long. So when you hear Smart there, I think the tone that he's taking in response to the game ought to be the one that Georgia fans also take there as well. Smart says, listen, everything that we do is either going to be exaggerated for the great or exaggerated for the terrible. And that's probably true. We've all seen that play out ourselves a million times. We know that's the case. But my advice here is to you, not exaggerate this for the terrible. Georgia got an easy win on Saturday against Vanderbilt. We just showed you lots of examples of Georgia players acknowledging The offense needs to be more crisp for the entirety of the game. But, y'all, nobody played perfect this past Saturday. Alabama threw the ball all over the yard against Duke, but I don't know if you noticed, statistically speaking, they didn't run the ball all that well. Oklahoma had a big night offensively last night against Houston, but my gosh, that Sooners defense, even after giving Alex Grinch a ton of money as defensive coordinator, they're not playing a whole lot better right now. Ohio State was probably also a little more crisp in the early going of the game than they were later on in the game. Nobody had a perfect Saturday. Everybody's got room for improvement. But Kirby Smart, the Georgia coach, certainly seems to think his team got its 2019 campaign off to a good start. And if he feels that way, I don't think there's any room for UGA fans to feel differently. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us live on video today, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, on the radio at noon, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Actually, we're up into today for the Labor Day holiday there on 960 The Ref, but we're looking forward to being back there at noon tomorrow with our friends in Athens on 960 The Ref. And we're available as a podcast wherever you find them. For those of you enjoying a little time off yourself for this Labor Day holiday, hope that you are having a great time. And it's certainly a pleasure to be able to talk some Georgia football with you here today. We'll get John Stinchcomb later on. I want to talk about the debut of Zamir White here in a moment as well. Before we do that, can I take just a couple seconds and make what I think is a very exciting announcement? This is going to be one of the biggest events that we have done in quite some time, and one of the biggest events we'll do all season long. And I want to go ahead and make you aware of this now, because the last time we tried something like this, it booked up and sold out very, very fast. This time, I think, is going to be no different. In fact, I think the ticket demand for this is going to be higher and bigger and better than anything we've done before. So act quickly on what I'm about to tell you if you want to be a part of the fun thing of the upcoming season. Of course, everybody knows that Saturday, September 21st, is a big one for the Dogs, hosting Notre Dame in Athens on that Saturday. And we're going to give you a chance to enjoy that one in absolute luxury and style, in first-class accommodations. Let me tell you about Dog Nation Express. Now, you can go to dognationexpress.com and find out more about this, but essentially, here's what's going to happen on Dog Nation Express Day, which is Saturday, September 21st. We're going to have a big, fancy motor coach rolling out of here sometime in the early afternoon, heading to Athens for kind of an all-inclusive. It's an exclusive tailgate because it's going to be hard to get in there, but it's all-inclusive what you get in there, with food and beverages and kind of everything that goes along with that. It is going to be a first-class event. We've got some great sponsors who are teaming up with us to help make all this possible. I'll be telling you about them coming up in the days and weeks ahead. But because of the generosity of our partners who've teamed up with us to make Dog Nation Express possible, I'm here to let you know that your ticket for Dog Nation Express, which includes motor coach accommodations to Athens, having a great time on the bus on the way down, you know, catered beverage inclusive tailgate while you're there, the TVs and kind of all the really cool stuff that you've seen us do at Dog Nation tailgates in the past. We're going to have the whole nine yards kind of set up and going with all of this. That's all going to be there that day. Because of the generosity of our sponsors, we're able to offer you a ticket to this incredible event, which includes food and beverages and the whole nine. We're able to offer you a ticket for this for just $99 plus fees. So the website for you to go to today is dognationexpress.com. This is one of the biggest games in Athens in a long time, and everybody wants to do it big that day. And if you want to do it as big as it can possibly be done, the website for you to go to is dognationexpress.com to find out about how Dog Nation is going to be rolling into the Classic City there that day. I'm going to be a part of this. I want you to be a part of it as well. Tickets just $99 plus fees for an amazing tailgate experience. It starts the moment you leave Atlanta and rolls all the way throughout the day to an unbelievable, fully stocked tailgate set up just for you. Check out DogNationExpress.com for a whole lot more on this. All right, before I bring on John Stinchcomb, we talk to him about his thoughts in the game. Let me also go around the doghouse here for a moment. It's brought to you today by Pella Window and Door. And I thought one of the really cool moments of Saturday was when we finally got a chance to see the debut of Zamir White and those huge Zeus cheers that were just thundering in Nashville. And by the way, Georgia fans, an amazing job in Music City all weekend long. The game day environment atmosphere was even better in that regard. And, you know, we got to see limited window here. He wasn't, you know, obviously on the field the entire game, had to wait for a while for it to happen. We saw a couple moments from Zamir White that I thought were really pretty cool. And I thought that Jake Fromm, the Georgia quarterback, I thought his evaluation of White after the game was also pretty interesting as well. There was one tiny miscue for White. Other than that, a little bit of foreshadowing of what he might do a whole lot more this season. Here is Fromm on that.
Well, I'd rather him not fumble, but, man, he played great. You know, played strong, played tough, but you don't expect anything less from that guy. As big and physical he is, that's the kind of guy he is. Great guy, great player, and he played great tonight.
Yeah, listen, I think that while we didn't see as much of White as you maybe would have thought you might have seen, and certainly some Georgia fans hope to have seen, what you did see from him in a game does not do anything to change those whispers that we've been hearing about him going back to some of the scrimmages in August or some of the work that he's done since his injury recovery in practice. I think this is a guy that is very clearly going to be one of the top players for Georgia all season long, and it was great to see him have a chance to be on the field on Saturday. It's Around the Doghouse. It's brought to you today by our friends at Pella Window and Door. You know, Pella Window and Door of Georgia can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. It's family-owned and operated, which is a really good thing, but you also have that branch right here in Georgia, which means you get local service backed by the power of a national company, and that's a combination you just can't beat. You can also get 50% off qualifying installations right now or 0% APR for 48 months. That's valid through November 14th, so you want to take advantage of that deal as quickly as you can. Pella offers the best lifetime warranty, top-of-the-line equipment, and unparalleled expertise. You can schedule your free in-home consultation today. And Pella's award-winning team will take care of everything for you, the measurements, and all the other stuff that goes along with that. There's a couple different ways to get in touch with them. Let me give it to you here. First of all, the email address, I should say the web address, PellaSoutheast.us. That's PellaSoutheast.us. Or you can give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom. It's 404-445-2979. 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best, and it's great to have them as part of Around the Doghouse here on Dog Nation Daily. We'll talk more about Swift, Fromm, and the rest of the dogs later on, but let's get John's thoughts right now as we welcome him in, and certainly once again say glad to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Boy, it's great to have the former UGA All-American, a guy who's got great insight on the Dogs, talking about what happened on Saturday for Georgia against Vanderbilt. John Stinchcomb, welcome back to a Dog Nation Daily. Appreciate you being with us. Hope you're having a great Labor Day weekend. Thanks for sharing some of it with us. And I guess if you don't mind, let me start on the divide that I saw this past weekend from, certainly Georgia gets an easy win over Vanderbilt, but it wasn't quite as thorough and complete as some fans want it to be. John, is this an example of fans having just maybe too high of a level of expectation now, or did you also see some problematic areas when it comes to this game?
Well, it looked like game one to me. I mean, are there areas to improve? You better believe it. But it's a solid win in the SEC, and looking across the SEC East, that's something that you should be really thankful for, because, man, there are a lot of fans across the East that are pretty upset this morning about their team's performance. So, you know, for the Dogs, I thought it was a solid win. I thought it's a good way to open the season, especially that first half. And I also think there's a great room for improvement, which is a good thing.
Yeah, so along those lines, I mean, one of the things that I hear a lot of folks talking about is, and admittedly, I am not an X's and O's expert enough to know this, and sometimes I think statements like this can veer in the direction of being wishful thinking, but some UGA fans wonder, when you come out there and you are just blowing the doors off the joint in the beginning, and then that kind of stops happening, is that Georgia taking the phrase that gets used is foot off the gas? Is this Georgia deciding that it doesn't want to show more to upcoming opponents, maybe Notre Dame included? When you're watching a game like this, do you detect any kind of philosophical play calling change that once Georgia had a lead, it didn't feel like it needed to do much more after that? Was this Georgia not executing the plays that it was calling, or was this Georgia changing the kinds of plays that it was calling because it had decided that it had done enough on this particular day?
Well, you tell me, BA. The first series, it was run, 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 followed by a couple more runs, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a 10-yard gash here. That's how they started the game, is something that most fans might consider vanilla, just handing the ball off. It wasn't an exotic pass route. There wasn't anything fireworks worthy. It was just incredible execution behind an offensive line that was overpowering Vandy early on. So the implication of a play caller taking his foot off the gas, I think, is not applicable in this game. You look at Kyaris Jackson makes a wide open catch and ends up fumbling inside the 10-yard line. Otherwise, that's a touchdown. So I think Georgia just can clean up a number of areas. And they came out smoking hot and were kind of enforcing their will onto Vandy early in that game. And they just weren't as clean in the second half.
Along those lines, one of the things I had a chance to ask Smart about after the game, we played the audio of this a moment ago, and for a second I thought he was about to give me one of his classic rants on this, but he stopped just short of doing that, is that Georgia's offensive line, the vaunted line, did get stymied a couple times in short yardage situations. That's at least eye-opening if it's not all that big of a factor in the ultimate, you know, final score in this game. And I asked him, is that the kind of thing that's going to disappoint him given the offensive line's reputation? He chose to cite all the rushing success that Georgia did have. When you see a couple short yardage situations where the UGA offensive line maybe doesn't quite get it done, as a former lineman yourself, what do you make of that?
Well, I think that's, it makes a good point of, you know, normal down and distance rushing. I thought our offensive line was dominant just across the board. They were taking D linemen and throwing open holes and getting to the second level, especially by the interior guys. Short yardage, can they do better? You better believe it. But the area I think that has the most room for improvement for the offensive line is in pass protection.
Yeah.
I mean, Georgia's going to be a play-action pass offense, and I think when you saw situations where it was clearly passing downs, either by down and distance or the two-minute drill, that no longer plays to the strength of that offensive line. So you saw a lot of line movement, a lot of gains from the defensive line and pressure packages coming from Vandy, and they weren't picked up very clean. So I fully expect that's an area of emphasis going forward for that offensive line scenario that they can clean up and improve. And I think that is probably a little bit more concerning when you're going to face teams that you're not going to be able to lean on and gain 10 yards a carry in your normal down and distance. You're going to be in some situations where everyone in the stadium knows you're going to pass it and you have to be able to execute. So I'm pretty sure Coach Pittman is going to work a drill or two with some TE twists and various line games that can definitely be cleaned up by the front.
Yeah, I think that's a really strong piece of evaluation there, John. I'm glad that you said that. And I didn't intend to ask you about this, but since we're on the subject of offensive line, let me just stay on this topic for a brief moment here and say I thought it was very interesting how it worked out at right guard. Cade Mays did indeed get the start. I had predicted that Cleveland would ultimately get that start. They gave it to Mays, but Cleveland played a good bit on Saturday. It seems like they are truly going to rotate these guys during games, much the same way they seemingly have been doing during practice as well. And I guess I kind of understand this. Mays is too good to keep off the field. I believe that Cleveland is probably too good to keep off the field. So you got to find a way for both guys to be able to contribute. You want to keep them happy, and you want to keep, you know, guys who deserve to play ought to play, I guess, is the overall, you know, takeaway on that. What did you think of the way that Mays and Cleveland were managed on Saturday, trying to find some minutes for both of these very capable linemen at the moment?
I think it's healthy. I think back to my senior year, we had Kareem Marshall, George Foster, as two very talented tackles. And George Foster ends up going as a first-round draft pick to the Denver Broncos in the NFL draft, and probably didn't start every game because he's in rotation with Kareem Marshall. So it's not an indication of lack of talent. I think it's an indication that you have six offensive linemen that are start-ready in the SEC, and it's not uncommon. I mean, I think what's unique is that you see it on the offensive line. How many guys did they platoon at wide receiver or outside linebacker or defensive tackle?
Yeah.
I mean, they were all rolling in and out. So I think what's a little bit more noteworthy is that you actually have six guys that the coaching staff deems reliable. It's not a situation where you have two guys that, you know, we can't really trust them on a regular basis, so we're going to split the difference, it'd be quite the opposite. You got six guys that they feel like they can count on and keep them fresh and rotate in.
Yeah, on the defensive side of the ball for a moment, I thought the story was very similar to what we just said with the offense, where you can fixate on the good and talk about what that group did well. Keeping Vanderbilt without a touchdown, I actually think, is a pretty good job, especially late in the game when Georgia had a ton of reserves, and in some cases, third-string reserves. And, of course, John, you and I both know that Georgia's third string is a little different than most of the SEC's third string is going to be. But that last drive, keeping Vanderbilt out of the end zone, a lot of the work that was done there was with guys that you probably don't see on the two-deep necessarily right now, but they go out there and get that done. So you'll feel good about that. And yet at the same time, you know, I don't like the fact that Keyshawn Vaughn averages about, what, 5 yards a carry. The so-called havoc plays, unless there's a ton of PBUs that maybe I didn't see in terms of tackles for loss and sacks, you didn't have necessarily a million of those. So much the same way you did enough to dominate, but maybe not quite enough to feel like you played a perfect game on offense. I guess defensively, for me, it's a little bit the same way. Plenty of good, maybe some stuff that you still want to see more of. What did you make of the other side of the ball?
I was probably more encouraged by the defensive play than the offense. I think, it's kind of odd to say that, but the expectations are so high with such an experienced quarterback in Jake Fromm and his ability to be so accurate with the football and a stable of running backs that is unrivaled across college football. I mean, we're four deep of guys that are exceptionally talented. I'm guessing Zeus is your number four who comes in. So the expectations on offense are incredibly high. I think there's some unknown with the defense, and I think for a game one, they played exceptionally well. The secondary looked very solid, and especially with the guys that were starting out. And, you know, there was, like you say, there's a number of personnel platooning in throughout that game that I didn't see an incredible drop-off. Was there the havoc plays? No, but I didn't think there was as many opportunities. I like seeing Azeez Ojulari coming off the edge and getting a sack in combination with the rest of the linebackers. I mean, Tindall and Quay and let's talk about the starters.
Yeah.
And Crowder and Monty Rice, those guys were solid, man. They looked good.
Yeah, no, they really did. We're going to give a couple more questions with John Stinchcomb here coming up in just a moment. Before that, let me remind you folks that, of course, this is Labor Day weekend. Many of you having pool parties and cookouts and back porch activities, things like that this weekend. Of course, if you're doing that, the place to go for all of your needs is right there at Kroger. Kroger app, Kroger.com, great place to download some coupons to do some big-time saving for the big-time party you may be having here for Labor Day. Hope you'll check that out with our friends at Kroger. John, you mentioned this a moment ago, and I wanted to get more of your thoughts on this. Really bad day for three SEC East teams, all of which Georgia plays. Most embarrassing here, of course, is Tennessee losing to Georgia State. But South Carolina's loss against North Carolina is not much better. And Missouri at Wyoming getting beat in that game is pretty ugly as well for a team that got some top 25 votes in the AP poll to begin the season. What did you make, I guess, most significantly here Tennessee, but the others as well, what did you make of these SEC East teams looking so bad on Saturday?
Well, I think it's a scary proposition for all those that claim the SEC is best top to bottom. I think the conference as a whole still presents arguably three, if not four, of the best teams in the country, but the separation between the haves and the have-nots seems to be widening. You know, we talked about it over the summer, BA, and when we were doing the On the East segment, who's threatening you out of the SEC East, and after week one, you got to like your chances if you're a dog fan.
Yeah.
And not only because you've got a good team, but it seems like there's so many other programs that are trying to gain traction, and if anything, they're losing ground. I mean, the separation, how would you feel as a Georgia fan if you came close in a game against Georgia State? And that's not a knock on Georgia State. It should be an indication of where you're at as an SEC program. I couldn't be more proud for the guys at Georgia State who, you know, competed their tails off and come off with a huge win. But Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt, who's, you know, trying to spark some SEC rivalry that has otherwise been stagnant for a few years, has got to be scratching his head. I don't know how many hours of sleep he's got, but it can't be many since that game. I mean, it's going to be hard just to get the recruits in the door having a loss like that. So this season, strength of schedule is not going to be great for the Dogs if week one is any indication. But you still have some big games in Texas A&M, Auburn, Notre Dame. But the SEC East looks exceptionally weak. I get it. It's only week one, but, man, there were some there's some ugly games across the board that really shows the separation that should exist between Georgia and the rest of the herd.
A couple quick things before we let you go. We'll try to make these kind of fast. This Saturday, Georgia's going to honor Vince Dooley. Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium. That name will be christened for the home opener against Murray State. John, you're not only a former Georgia player, you're still a pretty significant stakeholder in this university, certainly the athletic program. From your perspective, what does Dooley mean to UGA, and what does he mean to you personally?
Well, I think he's a cornerstone of our entire university. I think he's arguably one of the most recognizable figures to ever come through the University of Georgia, and was instrumental in setting the program up for the success and expectations that exist for the university. And I think it's long overdue that he gets this sort of recognition. I couldn't be more proud to be a part of the athletic board during a time like this, not only for the success that's being held by the current team, but the recognition of those on which whose shoulders we stand to get here, and none more prominent than Coach Dooley.
I think that's very well said. Let me do one tiny thing before I say goodbye to you today, John. What was your thoughts on seeing, and I think you touched on this at the very beginning of our conversation, those huge numbers of Georgia fans that traveled to Nashville on Saturday?
Oh.
How well did that translate on TV, and how cool of that was that for you to be able to see?
It was a away home game for Georgia. Seeing that much red, I got a couple buddies who played at Vandy, including Jim May. We went to high school together in Parkview, and yeah, it's embarrassing for their alumni to see their home stadium taken over by an in-conference opponent. And you know, honestly, BA, I would be surprised if the SEC doesn't look at the ticket pricing from the box office practices of some of these teams, because it really doesn't seem fair to me that Georgia fans are price gouged for this Vandy game, because Vanderbilt is trying to seize on an opportunity to almost prey on visiting teams that travel well. If anything, it should be almost a standardized pricing system, and at least relatively, it doesn't have to be across the board, but man, it looked great for Georgia to show up in force in the numbers that they had. It was really impressive to see from the TVs.
Well, John, it's an incredible opportunity to have a chance to talk to you here today after the win for Georgia on Saturday against Vanderbilt. It's a big week coming up for the Dogs as well. We'll look forward to getting a chance to a chat with you soon, including the Marlows matchup this Thursday as we look ahead to the Dogs and the Racers of Murray State. So I expect you to come in on Thursday with just reams and reams of data on what Murray State's bringing to the table, all right?
I've already started my research. Nick, no mistake.
John, we'll talk to you later.
They're the Racers. I just found that out. Yeah.
We'll talk to you later on, John.
All right, BA. Thanks, brother.
Good stuff.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
On a much more serious note, if you haven't checked out the Marlows matchup presented by our friends at Marlows Tavern, John and I had a great time last week looking ahead to Vanderbilt. A lot of the stuff that John laid out on the line ended up coming true for the Dogs on Saturday, and I'm guessing it's going to be the same thing here this weekend as well. Listen, there is just an extra level of credibility that comes from a guy that's done it at a high level. John, a former All-American, a guy that earned a paycheck for a long time as a member of the New Orleans Saints, he brings something to the table when he talks Georgia football, and it's good to be able to talk to John about it here on Dog Nation Daily and on the Marlows matchup coming on coming up a little bit later on this week. All right, let me also talk about my friends at MyBookie just for a moment. You know, a lot of you getting ready for the start of the NFL season, you want to be a part of the first online handicapping super contest that comes from my friends at MyBookie. It's just $100 to enter, and first prize is going to be guaranteed of, at least $100,000. You just got to pick five NFL games against the spread each week, and then as you kind of climb your way up the leaderboard, you look to take home a share of those prizes, cash and prizes. That's going to be a really good stuff. Also, big bonus this year when you sign up with MyBookie for the first time, find them online by just typing in MyBookie into your browser. You can get there, and when you get there, use the promo code DOGNATION. It's all one word, DOGNATION, spelled the way it's supposed to be, D-A-W-G. When you get there and you do all that, how about this? You can get up to a $1,000 first deposit bonus, and you can double your first deposit when it comes to my friends at MyBookie. But you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION. Find them online, MyBookie. Use the promo code DOGNATION. You can have a great time. It's very, very simple. You bet, you win, you get paid. MyBookie is that easy. Some folks who did not fare quite so well this past week, though, were our friends in the SEC East. Let me start with Tennessee. And here's what I'm very confident in. Two very different opinions on the Vols. If you think they're going to play terrible every single Saturday just because they lost to Georgia State, I think you're going to end up being disappointed. In fact, look ahead to this Saturday against BYU. I think we see a different Tennessee team. However, playing better for much of the rest of the season, and I think that Tennessee probably will, is not going to do a whole lot to ultimately change Jeremy Pruitt's fate as the coach of Tennessee. I don't know how much longer he coaches for Tennessee, but I do believe that his career as Vols coach effectively ended on Saturday. He is essentially a lame duck for one more year, two more years, five more years. However, he got taken out at the knees by Georgia State. There are a few reasons for this. There is a media around Knoxville that wants to take him down a peg. He's one of these coaches that has a little bit of an abrasive relationship with the media. A lot of the coaches do that, win big, so the media has no opportunity at retribution. At Tennessee, now they get their chance to get even with him. You've already seen some sniping from some of the local beat reporters about Pruitt in the wake of losing to Georgia State. I believe you'll say more. He will not have the local media as an ally for him because, let's face it, he hasn't been quite so cozy with them. The other thing facing Pruitt here is he's got a careerist as an athletic director, someone who's always looking for his next job or his next opportunity. It would not surprise me at all if Philip Fulmer wants to be Tennessee coach again, especially when you see Mack Brown winning at North Carolina, Les Miles winning at Kansas. Philip Fulmer probably says, why couldn't it be me again? So when Jeremy Pruitt, on the heels of losing to Georgia State, he's going to look around. Media, athletic director, big-time boosters. I don't think he's going to find for himself very many allies with this program, and winning recruiting battles for guys like a Rick Gilbert and others, I think gets much harder when you say, sorry, we couldn't beat Georgia State, but when you're here, we're going to win big. It's a sales pitch that just doesn't work very well. So the idea of Jeremy Pruitt being the next Kirby Smart or maybe one day being the next Nick Saban, I think the chance of that happening effectively ended this past Saturday. He may coach at Tennessee for a while. They'll probably beat a couple of teams still this year, but he'll never have the full support of that program because the loss on Saturday deems him untrustworthy in the eyes of the people around that program who probably matter most. I, by the way, don't think the South Carolina loss to North Carolina was all that much better. I think that North Carolina is a bit of a laughingstock for even having hired Mack Brown, and he goes out there and wins that game on Saturday. Muschamp, questionable coaching decisions, at least one big one, punting at midfield. The odds favor going for it there. He tried to set up North Carolina on the long field, but his defense right now can't tackle. So the chances of Carolina scoring, North Carolina, I mean, were probably much better than maybe he realized. And the Tar Heels go on to win that game on that kind of late scoring drive. If you're North Carolina, though, I'm not quite sure which. I'm sorry. I get my Carolinas confused. If you're South Carolina, though, I'm not quite sure what you're supposed to do about this. Because on the one hand, Muschamp is not winning enough games on the field. He's not. But if you replace him with somebody else, and he is on the hot seat now. I mean, at least he starts the season on the hot seat. He has a chance to change that. But if you replace him with somebody else, what other coach is going to recruit a Zach Pickens? What other coach is going to recruit a Ryan Helinski? What other coach is going to steal a Jamias Williams out of the state of Georgia? Now, some of these players have played better than others, and some of these players may end up going on to be better overall prospects than others. But Muschamp is doing some things that a lot of South Carolina coaches from a recruiting standpoint might not be able to do. So it's a real, it's a weird conundrum for the Gamecock. You've got a coach who's recruiting but not winning. And yet, if you bring in a coach that's likely to recruit worse than him, what are the chances of you actually winning more with that? So that's an issue. Missouri, just an embarrassment. You shouldn't even be in Laramie, Wyoming. No one's ever voluntarily chosen to go to Laramie, Wyoming. They've only ended up there by accident. Missouri apparently bucks that trend, going there of its own accord, and it got what it deserved. It lost as nearly a 3-touchdown favorite. Two other really quick SEC through stories to get to, and then we're going to move on and get back to Georgia for a moment. Auburn's win, I thought, was a pretty big one. A little ugly in the early going, but coming from behind to win the way they did. Bo Nix getting a chance to throw the touchdown is a nice moment for him. He'll probably be able to build off that. I do think Auburn's a dangerous opponent for Georgia and everybody else. I don't think this team wins 10 or 11 games, but they're good enough to beat somebody, and they're going to be a real threat to Georgia when Georgia goes to Jordan-Hare in November. I don't want to hear another word, though, about the Pac-12 in these games against ranked SEC teams. I don't think they've beaten a ranked SEC team since, like, 20 years or something crazy like that. They've, like, over their last 12, the Pac-12 is against ranked SEC opponents. It's just not going to happen. And people say, well, they should have won this game. Folks, do you know how many of these, like, SEC versus teams west of the Mississippi have played out much the same way as this, where over the course of a long haul, the Pac-12 team or the team west of the Mississippi just sort of runs out of gas against the bigger, stronger, more physical SEC team? This is a blueprint that has been in place now, and Auburn was the latest to take advantage of it. I don't want to hear about the Pac-12 in these spots. One more quick point to get to. I think one of the interesting stat lines on Saturday is one that may have gone unnoticed. Alabama played at least well enough against Duke on Saturday to get 5 passing attempts from Mac Jones. He was 4 of 5 in the game, only for 31 yards, so no big numbers or anything like that, but they did get him in the game. No one has depth at their backup quarterback right now. No one of the national elite, with the, maybe the exception of Oklahoma because it has Spencer Rattler, but other than that, no one has a quarterback that they really trust over the long haul as a backup. College football's changed in that regard. I do think it'll be a race to see who can get the most experience for their backup early on in the season. And at least for week one, that race is won by Alabama, who does get 5 attempts for Mac Jones. So keep your eye on that, and we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, one of the things we're going to do each Monday in our program is talk about how Jake Fromm, DeAndre Swift, the two Georgia players right now that seem to be most in the thick of the Heisman race, how they compare to the rest of the Heisman hierarchy. And it's brought to you by our friends at Kroger. And I guess as you look at the Heisman hierarchy for this week, I think it's safe to say that your Heisman ballot today features these names. Jalen Hurts making his debut for Oklahoma, big night last night against Houston, especially running the football, doing the kinds of things that a Sooner quarterback hasn't done since Jamel Holloway was toting the rock for the Sooners back in the Barry Switzer era. That was Hurts last night. You put him on this list as of right now. Justin Fields at Ohio State accounting for 5 touchdowns. You put him on this list for right now, too. Going back to Thursday, Travis Etienne from Clemson. I think you probably put him on this list for going over 200 yards rushing. He's actually probably ahead of Trevor Lawrence on the Heisman hierarchy presented by Kroger right now. How about the two Georgia guys, though? Not a great night statistically for Jake Fromm, at least compared to what we've come to expect from him. He probably rates below these guys after 1 week in the Heisman hierarchy presented by Kroger. And after the game, he talked a bit about his performance and how he would evaluate himself.
It's tough to tell. You know, we'll go back and watch the film and really kind of look at the decision making and make sure I was making the right checks and making the throws I needed to make. You know, I didn't want to force any throws, but if there's throws I needed to make out there, I needed to make.
On the other hand, for a Georgia running back DeAndre Swift, while he did not find the end zone, he was well over 100 yards rushing and one of the key leaders for the Bulldogs offense on Saturday. After the game, like so many other Georgia players who we've shared with you on today's show, a little disappointed with how the Dogs finished. But overall, pretty happy to have contributed to a road win in the SEC against the Commodores. Here's DeAndre Swift.
We came out great, just like how we wanted to come out, but not too proud of how we finished in the second half. I mean, we left a lot of points out there, but defense held us strong. So we got a lot of work to do on offense, but you can't forget what it feels like to win, so I'm happy.
So overall, if you're looking at your Heisman hierarchy presented by Kroger, it's probably DeAndre Swift ahead of Jake Fromm after 1 week. And Swift will now be in competition with Hurts and Fields and Tua Tagovailoa probably in there as well as this, and Travis Etienne from Clemson, as his Heisman race will continue all season long. Speaking of the Heisman hierarchy presented by Kroger, let me tell you about a great deal and a great offer from them right now. Now in select Kroger stores, you can get 1 hour delivery. Just go to Kroger.com or the Kroger app and you can place your order today. Kroger is obviously going to try to help you this time of year. My son starts fall baseball tomorrow. So many of you have these kind of fall events going on in addition to school being going on. You don't have enough time. Well, Kroger wants to give some of the time back to you. So go to Kroger.com or the Kroger app to find out how you can start saving some time by maybe getting your items from Kroger delivered right to your door in 1 hour or less. Really good stuff from our friends there at Kroger. All right, so a very busy show for us here on this Monday, and obviously it'll be like that for the next 6 months, we hope, all the way through what we think could be a national championship run for the Georgia Bulldogs. It also continues today. No Labor Day holiday for Dog Nation. Kirby Smart press conference, as I'm speaking this live. We're about, an hour, 15 minutes away from the Kirby Smart press conference beginning. Georgia player interviews also coming up today. So stay close to DogNation.com or the Dog Nation video channels, and you can keep up to date on all of that. And, of course, a Gator hater updater. Around here, we believe that a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater, as happy as we are about seeing Tennessee lose, and that's not unentertaining, to say the least. Eyes towards what's going to happen in November later on, and a reminder, even on Labor Day, we keep this going. Now been 1,038 days since the lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. Y'all enjoy the day off if you're getting one, and I'll see you back here tomorrow for Dog Nation Daily. Have a great day, everybody.